I want to invite you to pull out of your bulletin your GPS guide that you received as you came in. GPS, if you don't know, is a resource that we share each week. It's for you to take our messages a step deeper into your own personal devotion time. You'll find that on the inside of the GPS guide. On the front is a space for you to take some notes. And if you have a pen, or you can find a pen somewhere, I want to invite you to write some things down today. So if you will just locate that as we move through this message. This is message number 6 in this series. One more next weekend. I shared with you last weekend that I hoped that the length of this series communicates to you the importance that we place on this conversation. And what this conversation is about for us is it's about questions, it's about doubts, it's about the process of finding faith, and it's about those moments in life where we feel like we are losing faith. And I hope if you've been able to be with us over the last 5 weeks, or if you were able, if you haven't, to check that out online, I hope this series has been helpful for you. I hope more than anything, before this series began, kind of my idea for what success would look like is that at the very least, the minimum would be that we would feel differently about the questions and doubts that we have. That if you previously had felt a little bit isolated, a little bit alone in some of those doubts that you may experience in your life, that at the end of this series you would know, well, no, I'm pretty normal. I'm just like everyone else. That questions and doubts are a part of this journey of faith. That was the minimum that I hope would happen in this series. And so I hope that that has been helpful for you. Because I believe, at least in my own experience, that as I look back over my growth and in my life, I can see how questions and doubts were actually the catalyst for growth in many instances of my life. And entering into that awkward period, that uncomfortable period of really wrestling with what I believed was actually what led me to a new place and a new understanding. And so a part of this is by design. It's a part of this journey of faith. I want to tell you a little bit about the back story of this series. Mike brought this idea, our senior pastor, who we have 6 services each weekend. He preaches 3, I preach 3. And so whenever we think about a series, it's kind of a negotiation between the two of us of what we're going to end up doing. Because I'll bring an idea and I'm really excited about it, and he's just like, no, that's not good. And he'll bring an idea and he's really excited about it. I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. You know, and so we kind of have to figure out how we're going to do what these ideas that we have. And so when he brought this idea, I thought, you know, I think that's a really important idea. I have no idea how I would preach that. And that's sort of what you have to do as a pastor, is kind of figure out, okay, so this is the theme, this is the idea. How am I going to engage that topic? And I really couldn't wrap my head around it. I mean, I just couldn't figure out how we were going to engage this topic, especially the length that we were going to give to this series. And so a couple months went by and we met again and he brought it up again. Hey, what do you think about that skeptic series? I was like, okay, we need to do it. So just put it on the calendar and I'll figure it out. And so a few months before this series began, we got together with our worship team, several people who help us plan worship, and we began to talk about this series. And when I left that meeting, I knew what this series was about. I knew who this series was for, and I knew specifically who I wanted to speak to in this series. And so for the last 5 weeks, as you've been coming to worship, if you've been here, I've been having a conversation with someone. And today, what I want to do is I want to introduce you to her. And so let's take a moment and see this video. So that first meeting that we had, we started by watching that video. It was a video that Pastor Sharon found. It's not a video that we have created. Amanda's not here today. She's not a part of our church. The video actually comes from an atheist website, which is a website about just talking about people who have left the faith and have embraced a new way of thinking. And so when that video was over, this is the thought that came to my mind, is I may not have the opportunity to speak to Amanda, but you might. And so this series, as we've moved through the last 5 weeks, it's been about helping you. It's been about encouraging you. It's been about inspiring you and meeting you where you are in your questions and doubts. But there's been this ulterior motive that's also been happening. I'm just going to tell you about right now. And that is that my hope has been to train you for the moment when you get to have a conversation with someone that I may not have the opportunity to meet, that I may not have the opportunity to speak to, that I may not have the opportunity to engage with the questions that they may have in their life. Every single person who is here today knows someone whose story either is or will be Amanda's story. I want you to think about that. Every single person here knows someone who either already has or will have a story like Amanda's. A desire to know, a questioning spirit, someone who might even have the diligence to read the scriptures all the way through twice. And in the best case scenario, you will have an opportunity to speak with them. You will have an opportunity to talk about faith with them. And though that conversation may at this moment, you may feel very intimidated and ill-prepared for that conversation. I want you to hear that again. That would be the best case scenario. That you would have the opportunity to visit with them and connect with them and share with them just to simply talk about faith. And so today what I want to do is I want to talk about that. I want to talk about how we talk about faith and share with you just some practical ideas, tips, insights from my life of working as a pastor and visiting with people at different parts of the places on the faith journey and how we might engage this conversation. And this talk, I'm not even sure I would call this a sermon today, but this talk, you're going to hear it from the perspective of a Christian. And so you're certainly hearing someone who's talking to Christians, but I think this is what I'm going to share with you is for all of us, wherever we are on the faith spectrum and wherever we fall on these questions. So here's what I'd like you to do. I'd like you to draw a line on your message page, okay? And on one end of the line, I want you to write the word defensive. And on the other end of the line, I want you to write the word aggressive. Okay, so this is a spectrum that kind of defines how we might respond to a conversation about faith. Again, best case scenario, someone wants to talk to you about faith and how do we respond to that? There's kind of two extremes of how we might, the posture we might have in that conversation. So let me say a word first about the defensive side and what that might look like, because that one is a little bit harder for us to define. I grew up in a strange place. And the place that I grew up in is a place called Church World. My dad is a pastor, and so my whole life has been somehow centered in church. The first 5 years of my life, I lived next door, like literally next door to the church almost every single day growing up. Those first 5 years of my life, I spent some time at the church. We'd go over and see dad. You know, he worked across the street. That was what life was about. And all growing up as a preacher's kid, you know, you live in Church World and people are pretty comfortable with leaving you there. You know, they don't engage you on certain things because they know that your dad's the pastor. For instance, this is going to shock you. I don't know if you've heard me say this before, but when I went to college, I went out with my friends one night from the Wesley Foundation, the Christian student ministry. We went to Shadow Canyon Dance Hall to go country western dancing. And I turned to someone that night and I asked them what the smell was. And they were like, you don't know. I was like, no, what is that smell? Can't they do something about that smell in here? It just smells awful. And they said, David, that's beer. Oh, okay. So, okay, Church World, right? All right. Very, very, you know, closed in Church World. And so growing up, almost all of my friends were Christians. I mean, that was my early years. That was my life growing up. All throughout high school, almost all my friends were Christians. And when I went to college, and as a preacher's kid, you sort of have this moment of recognition that you can escape. You can get out if you want to. I don't know why. People have asked me the question why, but, you know, I'm 2 weeks into college and I'm active in the Wesley Foundation. I'm active in that student ministry. So almost every moment of my life has been somehow centered in church, and that's been my relationships. Now, if you have had experience in Church World, okay, if you either grew up in Church World or maybe you've been a part of a church for enough years, then you recognize that there's things that you learn in Church World that others may not know. For instance, if you live in Church World, you understand that there are different brands of Christianity. There are different flavors, right? There are people who say things this way, and there are people who say things this way. There are people who believe these things, and there are people who believe these things. And on most of the essentials, there's sort of this unity. But when you're in Church World, you sort of have this expectation that, well, yeah, they kind of say it that way. We don't really say it. You know, there's just this understanding. And so one of the defensive sides of me as a pastor is when I hear people talking about Christians and describing them in a way that it's really hard for me to process. I hear people express things about things they don't like about Christians or things that they don't like about people of faith. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I don't like those things either. I've never been to church and heard the pastor preach about who's going to hell. That's not my brand. That's not my flavor, right? And so there's a part of me when I hear people engage with Christianity from the outside, there's a part of me that wants to say, wait a second, that's not me. That's not my brand. That's not my flavor. That's not how I think about that. But here's the problem with that. This kind of hit me a couple of years ago. The recognition that the person that I may be in conversation with or whoever is expressing these things that just kind of hit me the wrong way, they didn't grow up in church world. They don't understand church world. They don't have the same perspective and experience that I have. And so when they describe Christians as hypocritical and judgmental and anti-science and anti all of these things, well, they don't have the same experience that I have. And so when we respond with a defensive posture, here's the real problem, is it makes the conversation about me. It makes the conversation about you. It's often inviting people to engage the conversation from where you come from, but they may have no idea where you come from. No idea. And their response to you, the shock that they may have at your experience and your perspective, may be as great as the shock that you have at their perspective. So that's the defensive side. It's the side that makes a story all about you and all about me. And then, of course, there's the aggressive end. And I don't think I have to give you an example of this. I bet somewhere in your bank of memory, you can think of a time when you saw someone or experienced someone responding to a faith conversation or a faith question in a really aggressive way. Maybe even you can think of a moment in your life where you handled something in a way that you weren't real proud of. Maybe you can even think of a conversation that you regret, something that you wish you could take back, some moment in your life when you so much desired to make a point that you lost the opportunity to make a difference in someone's life because you responded in the aggressive way. And of course, in the aggressive way, what you're really doing is you're making the conversation about them and where they are. And often when people respond to us in an aggressive way, it's a way of them isolating us. It's pushing us away. The defensive posture is a way of pulling back from that conversation. The aggressive way is a way of pushing them away, making them all about them, making them feel isolated and attacked. And so here's the question, is there another way? Is there another way? And I would say that the middle way is defined by this word. It's the way of being open. It's the way of being open. Let me say a few words about what that means to be open. Both of these extremes, the defensive side and the aggressive side, are really the way we respond when we feel threatened. And often in those moments when we feel threatened, we'll go back and forth, right? Like we'll respond with defensiveness and then we'll go on the aggression because, you know, we just feel threatened. We feel uncomfortable. We feel ill-prepared for the conversation, whatever it may be, but we don't feel good about being there. So if the extremes are defined by that, by feeling threatened, then the middle way, the open way, has to be a way in which we embrace vulnerability. We embrace vulnerability. We embrace that discomfort. We embrace being in that place where we feel a bit decentered. We feel ill-prepared. We don't feel quite right there. To be vulnerable and to be open and to be honest about our own lives and our own struggles. If you were here in the first week of this series, I began in that way by sharing with you my struggles and my questions and my doubts for the very specific purpose of being vulnerable with you and inviting you to be vulnerable with me. So if you're here today and you're thinking about this from the perspective of someone who's still trying to figure this all out, part of what I want you to hear in this message is that this is a place that I hope and pray is defined by being open. open to you and your questions and your doubts wherever you are. I promise your question will not shock me. I promise. Now, as you think about being open, here's something I want you to recognize, particularly if you are someone who wants to reach and care for those who have questions. Openness doesn't start when the conversation begins. Openness doesn't start when the conversation begins. Openness is a vibe that people get from us. In all sorts of different ways, for all sorts of different reasons. But openness is a door that is left open for someone that one day they may walk through. But openness, while the defensive is about you and me, the aggressive is about them, openness is about us. It's a place where we can meet and we can have a conversation about us, about our lives and our stories and where this whole faith journey may intersect. Now, in case you're thinking to yourself, I don't know, David, that sounds a little crazy. I'm not sure I'm going to be a part of a conversation like that. I'm not sure I really know someone like that. I want to give you some statistics that will help you understand why I believe so strongly that you know someone who has a story like Amanda's story or will one day have a story like Amanda's story. So one of the things I try to do as a pastor is to be a student of culture, to understand how culture is shifting and shaping and how people of different generations respond to different questions. So a couple of numbers I want to share with you. First, Pew Research from March of this last year shared this stat with us, that 20% of Americans today describe themselves as religiously unaffiliated. That means they're not a part of church or any type of a religious structure. This has grown 5% in the last 5 years. Okay? These numbers on the other side here are from the Barna Research Group looking at people with a Christian background ages 18 to 29, and of those surveyed, 59% have left the church. 18 to 29 with a Christian background, that would be people like me who grew up in church world. 59% have left the church. 50% have expressed that they have been significantly frustrated with their faith for some reason, whatever that might be. 57% say they are less active than they were when they were 15 years old. And then 38% said that they have significantly struggled with doubts in their faith. Now, that number may be scary to you, okay? That 4 out of 10, that almost 40% of people would say, well, I have significantly doubted. But again, if we believe that doubts and questions are normal, if we believe that it is a part of the journey of faith, that it often leads to future growth, then we should expect that 4 out of 10 young people would say, there's been a moment of struggle. There's been a moment of doubt. There have been questions that I have needed answers. So to live your life in an open way where you invite those kind of conversations with people that you know, it may be a coworker that you have, it may be a neighbor down the street, it may be the child who is being raised in your own home, or your granddaughter or your grandson, who one day is going to ask you a question for which you're not prepared. How might we respond in those conversations? So just a few quick thoughts. Here's the first one. Don't panic. Don't panic. This last Thursday at 5 a.m., I showed up at the gym with Kurt here. Kurt is my personal trainer, and he gets me out of bed, well, 4 a.m. to get up there. And so 5 a.m. we're working out, and we've been working for a long time. And so, you know, there are some muscles that are being developed. Now, they're a little shy, so I'm not going to show you right now, but... So we're working with a little bit more weight, you know. As muscles develop, you work with a little bit more weight. And so I think we were working with a little bit more on Thursday. That's just my guess. He always picks out the weight, so I'm not really sure. He's also a little ambitious at 5 a.m. in the morning, I'll just tell you that. But so while we're working out, we get to the end, and we did a bicep workout at the very end. And we got the big 45-pound bar, and I won't tell you how much additional weight was added because it really wasn't that much. But so we're doing a bicep curl, and I'm dead. Like, it's at the very end, and I am really, really dead. So we're like end of second set, and I can barely get the thing up, and I set it down, and I made the comment to him. I said, you know, I'm dead. I can't do any more, but it's not my biceps. which is, you know, not a good sign when you're doing a bicep curl. This is where it should hurt. I said, I've got more energy in my biceps. I said, man, my forearms are just killing me. They're just killing me. And so we kind of thought about it for a second. And he said, you know what that probably is? It's probably because you're holding the bar too tight. And that's what it was. All throughout the workout, everything that we did with the barbells or with the bar, I was holding onto the bar so tightly that these muscles were the ones that were getting sore. And the other ones, they were okay. They still had a little bit more juice in them. But here, you know, that's where I was really struggling because I was holding on too tight. So here you go, moms and dads. This is going to hurt. You ready? Grandparents, this is going to hurt. It's possible, particularly in a conversation about faith, when we're talking about questions and doubts, it is possible to hold on too tight. It's possible to hold on so tightly to want to share with that young person, with your child, something that is so meaningful to you, so important to you, that you just hold on too tight and you push them away. Again, if we believe that questions and doubts are part of the journey of faith, that it's natural, that it's actually sometimes a good thing, it represents God doing something in that person's life, then part of what we have to be able to do, and I'm only reminding you, so you'll remind me, we have to loosen that grip a little bit. And we have to sometimes let go and simply not panic, realize that the world is not on our shoulders and that what may be bothering us or worrying us or sending us to our knees in prayer may actually be the best thing for this person that we love and we care about. So don't panic. Thought number two is don't be lukewarm. So the opposite extreme of that would be, well, I don't want to talk about it. It's going to be conflict. I don't know what they're going to think. The opposite extreme would be that you would be lukewarm and never have that conversation. I know I'm bouncing around here, Brian, so go to that Rob Bell quote. Rob Bell says this in his book, his most recent book. I believe that this is one of the most urgent questions people are asking at this time about the very nature of faith. Can conviction and humility coexist as the dance partners we need them to be? Can conviction and humility coexist? What our culture will teach us is that the answer is to just not have any convictions. What our culture will teach us is that the highest value is to simply be tolerant of whatever people may think. And while humility is a virtue that every Christian should strive for, humility meaning that I can have grace and openness to wherever people are, it doesn't mean that I'm going to live my life as a person with no convictions. And so when I say don't be lukewarm, I think people respect people of deep conviction, particularly when they see those convictions lived out in their life every single day. So rather than being lukewarm, live your life with a sense of integrity about the convictions that you have. And when the question is asked, have the courage to share your answer. Have the courage to share your response. Have the courage to be honest with the people in your life that you care about. So two extremes there. There's the panic and then there's also kind of the lukewarm, just avoiding the question. Here's the third thought. And you're going to have to put it up because I can't remember what it is. Third thought is pay attention to their story. Pay attention to their story. This is really, you know, again, we think about living in church world and people who have a different experience. There's often so much more going on whenever someone wants to ask a question about faith. There's this whole backstory that you may not know that may relate to who knows what, a relationship with a parent, with a spouse, with their relationship with the church, an experience that they had in church. I can't tell you how many times I've had a conversation with someone where eventually they shared with me what their church experience was like 5 years ago or 10 years ago or 15 years ago, an incredibly hurtful and harmful experience that they finally had the courage to tell the pastor about. So pay attention to their story and what might be going on there that may be the real thing that you need to engage in them. And maybe it is just being present and listening to the story that they want to share with you. And then the last thought is never forget that this is a story of grace. Never forget that this is a story of grace. Perhaps you've noticed that so far I've not read to you any scriptures. We've not opened the Bible yet. So if you're feeling a little upset that the pastor hasn't shared any scriptures with you, here's what I want to invite you to write down. The scriptures for today are the Gospel of Matthew, the Gospel of Mark, the Gospel of Luke, and the Gospel of John. Okay? And I'm sorry, I just didn't have time to read all those to you. At the end of the day, this is my conviction. That to live your life with a sense of openness, a willingness to be vulnerable, a willingness to share honestly from your own life and from your own experience, and to be willing to meet people wherever they are, my conviction is that that's how Jesus lived. That's how Jesus lived. And while there are many other things that we see in the scriptures that encourage us to live our lives in a particular way, a way that is set apart, a way that is holy, I think there's nothing more important for people of faith, followers of Jesus, than to simply just try to live like Jesus lived. And so when I read the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and I look at the way Jesus interacted with people, and I look at the audience that he was comfortable speaking to, and I realize how uncomfortable I am with that, that Jesus would engage people who I know would make me feel a little bit uneasy, then it reminds me that vulnerability and openness is the path that Jesus walked. And so while there's many other things that we want to share, there's many other things that we want people to grab hold of as they think about these conversations and then think about these questions, never forget that the most important thing that this story is all about is about grace. It's about a God that we believe created the world and created every single person who inhabits this world, gave them life, that gift, and loves them. And loves them. And so if someone walks away from a conversation with me, still fuzzy, still foggy, still not quite sure, but they know I care about them, and they know that the door is still open if they want to come back and continue that conversation, I just think I can take that as a win. Because I think that's how Jesus lived. I think that's how Jesus lived. So if you feel unprepared, and if you feel not ready, and if this idea of your son or daughter coming to you one day and bringing these questions, if that just scares you to death, you're probably in a pretty good place. You're probably in a pretty good place. Because it means you're vulnerable. It means you're open. And it means that in that place, as you share, life can be shared with them. It breaks my heart to hear a story like Amanda's story and to recognize that along the way, it just seems like there wasn't someone there who was willing to listen to what was really going on in her life. Which probably had something to do with the questions that she had, but probably had more to do with that part about the awkwardness of those teenage years and just looking for someone to love her. And for whatever reason, that opportunity was missed. I may not have the opportunity to speak with her, but you might. And so may you be people who live with an openness to others, a willingness to be vulnerable and to share honestly from your heart, so that her story might be different and the outcome may be a different place. Let's pray together. Loving God, I know for all of us, this is really hard. This is something that we do feel uncomfortable with, even with people that we deeply love, people we share life with every single day. Sometimes it's hard, Lord, just to talk about the things that are on our heart, to be open, and to step in that place that we don't know where the conversation is going to go. And so I pray for each person here who, wherever they are, wherever they fall in these deep questions of faith, that that you would give them courage to be willing to have that conversation, to ask that difficult question, to listen to that painful story, to be people who more than anything seek to model and live out the grace that we have experienced and see in you. I ask all these things in the name of Jesus, our Savior. Amen.